Nice to meet you too.
It's Violet, is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
No, and Violet.
And.
If you want,
and,
if you want to get fancy, you could say and Violet.
I was going to say Violet. I was going to say you got an extra T there, so it must be Violet.
And Sheila knows that stuff, and she spent many years in Paris.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
So
that doesn't
Sheila,
mean I know French, but
that's
on.
Right. So interview me, Sheila. Let's get it going.
And just remember, Anne is doing research for the next two books in Matthew's trilogy. So.
And they're going to be all about me and a little bit about Carolyn. So you, if you interviewed me, then that would give Anne some information.
Ah, the Ascension trilogy, huh?
Yeah.
Yes.
So he's, what is he, number one in the Ascension? And then Bob and Carolyn in that order? Is that what he's doing?
Well, no, we're
part
in the first
of your story.
Book. Yeah, mm-hmm. We're in the first
again?
Book.
Okay.
They are Biggs and Babs in the first story.
And which one is the male and which is the female?
Biggs is the male and
okay,
Babs
Biggs
is the female.
Okay, Biggs and Babs.
Yeah, and Biggs
those
and
are,
Babs.
Aren't they stupid names? Sheila, why the hell would I be called Biggs? It's just, you know, rather weak or disgusting, but Biggs. If
no, it
anything,
sounds big.
I'm not
Biggs. It sounds important.
Yeah, okay. Biggs and Babs. Oh, that's
sound
good.
Sound very waspish. Those are waspish names to me.
Waspish?
Well,
what's that mean?
I think there was
waspish.
Something else that I had chosen for Babs, but Matthew said that's what he wanted, so.
Babs, right, waspish.
Yeah.
Sheila says it sounds like waspish.
Yeah, Babs.
Yeah, Biggs and Babs,
that's
you're right.
That's a total
Sheila.
New England, yeah.
Yeah, and you would know, you've spent most of your life with those kind of people.
Yeah.
Are you from New England, Sheila?
I am, I'm from Rhode Island.
Oh, I'm from Maine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Very,
where are you living
cold.
Now?
South Carolina.
Are you
Charles,
still in Rhode
South
Island?
Carolina. No, I'm living
oh,
in South,
South
Carolina.
Carolina.
Yeah.
Oh, I migrated as well. I guess they call us snowbirds, except we stayed here, so I'm in Florida.
Ah. We're in Florida.
Oh, Delray Beach, which is right in the middle of West Palm and Fort Lauderdale.
Okay. Nice. I've been there.
Yeah, very cool place to be.
Very nice. So, yes, I heard Ian yesterday. That was very exciting. I actually came in halfway into him being on the radio. On the
oh,
radio.
That's great. So Ginny emailed you?
Allison sent me a text.
Lucky, and you happened to have your text right there, and you tuned in. And so what did he sound? Remember his first communique back in January, you thought he sounded evil. Did he sound evil yesterday?
What?
Yeah, you don't even remember that you said that.
I would never say that. That doesn't sound like me.
All right. Well, that was another Sheila. That was during the time of stress. You weren't aware, fully conscious of what you were saying.
Okay.
Even though we haven't talked in many, in, well, geez, 8 months or something, I still know all about you. It just comes around, you know. We just can't avoid knowing Hunter and Ionette. You know it.
Yeah.
Other Ionettes. So Sheila, you go proactive. You tell, what do you want? I could say, what do you want to know? Or, you know, what you get from Ion yesterday?
Well, it was just incredible to hear him live again. That was nice, and I didn't know that he said my name in the beginning, because I guess that's a threat on the dupes, or that someone posted that, oh, Sheila, Sheila, Sheila.
Yes, and I don't remember what that was.
I think it was someone said, get Ian to talk about the labyrinth painting.
Yeah, Ginny brought that up. Yeah, she was talking about the labyrinth painting. And
then someone else came in and yelled out a question, and then there was confusion, and Ian was saying, Sheila, 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 and nobody knew what it was, but I think then someone, and it could have been me, said, oh, he's talking about the labyrinth painting.
And then he was warning Sheila about being with me for an hour tomorrow, which is now today. Remember that part, Carolyn? We discussed that. He He was feeling sorry for us. Don't be timid, you know. Stand. Take your stand. Do the Hillary methods. Take your stand, not be moved.
Yeah, Bob's going on about your horrible year in which you wrote, you painted incredible paintings, got engaged, moved into a wonderful place, and all kinds of amazing things that Bob can't take credit for.
That's why it was horrible, because it wasn't, that's right. You were the author of the creation.
I was not. You did not have the correct author. Now, I want to say this because I keep forgetting to say it. I was telling Carolyn the other day that, well, back in 2010, if she got a high profile, so then Barbara Walters interviewed her.
And that's why I think the Babs name is interesting to me, and I agree to it. Mm-hmm. Babs is Barbara Walters, and it's also Barbara Streisand. There's a lot around the Babs word.
Right. So I was telling Carolyn, when you get interviewed, she will pull out some dirt on Carolyn and ask how the hell did she get where she got, since she's not a scientist and a doctor without a license and all this stuff. And I suggest to Carolyn that, well, you'll say, it's very interesting, Barbara Walters. You actually can't speak very well. And how the heck did you get where you are? You must have incredible talent. And he's telling her to say this to Barbara Walters. And then the punchline is, Ian says, you will be the first to make Barbara Walters cry.
By bringing up her speech impediment.
And it's such a great story, a great joke that I just had to get off my chest. I'm trying to remember to tell Carolyn. And this is a good context. It's being recorded. But isn't that amazing? She makes everybody cry, but there's going to be a turnaround. Carol's going to make Barbara Walters cry. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That brings me to a topic that I actually have a question about for the book.
Okay.
Matthew had wanted to have me describe, he said, Bob and Carolyn live in an environment. And so, you know, he said, if you can describe the way this environment is, you'll be one of the first authors to be able to do that. So I'm hoping you can enlighten me.
Well, Carolyn likes to be, she's sort of uniquely, decoratively simple. So the home has nothing but draping tie-dye rugs, or what are they, silken things, Carolyn?
Yeah, silk tie-dye
drapery. And all the walls are plastered with the drapery, so they willow and billow in the wind as the breeze blows through the house. It's a really nice effect, but very simple, but it's her own simplicity and uniqueness. That's the beginning point, what she did to the walls.
But I understood this. Now, hold on. Bob, I understood this, that is that way because you don't like things that are actually attached to the walls.
That's right. For a couple of years, everything just sat on the floor, and, you know, the few paintings and things, and I didn't want anything on the walls. I wanted blank walls. And then after a while, she couldn't take it, so she didn't put, you know, objects on the wall. She put this drapery in, and I accepted it. She came up with a solution.
And we hardly have any furniture. We hardly have any furniture, so we can pace around the living room during the call. Or, you know, I have my Egoscue tower where I can lie in front of that, and a slant board, and an exercise bicycle, and a big massage chair. So everything is geared to tools for, you know, fun and enjoyment and exercise.
Yeah, and the paintings and objects are still sitting on the floor.
Well, the Ascension painting is on a pedestal stool with a nice orange skirt around the pedestal.
But the labyrinth is on the floor.
The labyrinth is on the floor. We'll have to do something about that. But actually it matches because, you know, there's sort of yellow-orange coloring dominates the paintings. And we have a yellow Don Van Vliet poster sort of offsetting. On one side, Don Van Vliet.
Captain Beefheart.
In the middle is the pedestal of the Ascension painting. And on the right side is the Labyrinth painting. So it looks
very cool.
It is.
But the point is that we don't get too literal here. The environment that you have to describe is one of synchronicity and strange synchronicity, which is synchrony.
And simplicity.
And we have 239 ghosts in here, according to Ion. No, we can see the corner of our eye, but it's cram-packed with ghosts.
Yeah, we usually just live in small places. I mean, having lived in New York for 13 years, we had a very tiny apartment on the Upper East Side, and then we had a tiny house on City Island. But Ion said when we moved here, we were drawn to move into a big house because we had all these ghosts following us. And the house next door to us had never been inhabited. And Ion said that was to house the other ghosts because there wasn't enough room for them here.
Right.
Yeah, you wouldn't think they'd take up that much space.
Well, they do, and they can. And if we wanted to, we could see them, but then we'd have to deal with them, so we keep our potential down so we can see them. They're always in the corner of my eye, you know, that weird corner of the eye thing. There's movements happening all the time. But the reason the ghosts are here, they're hanging out with the guff, you know, with Ion. That's what's attracting them. So that's the environment. That's something to consider, Anne, is the actual having Ion permeate our place. For example, we heard today an Ion at Wendy out in Calgary. She has three dogs, and they're in the back. So whenever a neighbor or someone comes in the front door, the dogs get all excited and demand to get into the kitchen and into the living room and to jump all over the whoever's walking into the house. Well, yesterday when Ion showed up, and she has us on all the time, and the dogs do not get agitated by our voices, but as soon as Ion came on, the dogs started going hysterical and rushed the door and were bouncing and barking and screaming, and Wendy wants to hear Ion for the first time, and she's pissed off at the dogs because they're yelling and screaming and pawing the door, and she opens the door and they run in. And it's like they're looking for someone who's come in the front door, and they run around, there's nobody there.
Oh, wow.
Cool. Right.
Yeah.
And that's proof.
Say that.
Yeah, that's proof.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it's proof that when Ion, live Ion, comes into someone's listening environment, it is a physical force, and Ion's his dogs and nature are non-physical. So non-physical knew their master environment was there. And they ran in and then quickly relaxed when they realized there wasn't anything around and then just hung out real quietly. But they knew, and she has never seen them act so extreme. So that's proof that Ion leaks into your environment on beyond human voices.
Oh, interesting. That's neat. Right. And you live in Hawaii, and do you live like next to the beach or in a suburbia type of...
No.
I'm trying to build the scene here.
We live on the side of the tallest mountain in the world. Okay? You go up to the top of the mountain, and there's a military telescope in the proper scientific environment, and it has a sign there that this mountain is 500 feet or so higher than Mount Everest. Now, two-thirds of it's under the water, but it's still a mountain, and these scientists say... There may be a mountain over in Big Island that might be a few feet bigger than ours, but basically we're tied with the one in Big Island. So we're the tallest mountain in the world, and we are in the center of the world, the belly button of the world. We are 2,500 miles from the nearest land on the Asian side, the North American side, the Alaska side, and the South American side. We are exactly in the middle of the globe.
Oh, now this will really help to build the environment scene here. Yeah.
And Ion shows up.
And what's the name of the mountain specifically?
Haleakala. It's Haleakala, maybe. Right, Karen? Haleakala. Haleakala. And it's there are two big mountains on Maui. They're like two breasts. And then we're on the... west side, Carolyn? West Mountain or East Mountain? East Mountain. We're on the East Mountain.
Southeast. The other one, Haleakala, is northwest.
Oh, okay. So this mountain, so you have Ion comes through JW, but we're the ones recording and interacting with it. So we kind of think, you know, we're equal to the Georgia environment and maybe a little more. So here's Ion comes through the center of the world.
Oh,
you get that, Sheila?
And that actually makes sense why you would have the breeze coming in through the
the drapes and everything if you're on a mountain.
That's right. And we're we are a 12-minute downhill walk through the golf course and some nice resort houses to the beach. That's the first beach. We get there in 12 minutes, but I prefer to go to the farthest beach down towards the south, and that's Polo Beach, and that's about a 33-minute walk from our home. And I spend an hour in the water and then shower outside and then walk back home. And Carolyn's
every day?
Old, and she's too tired to go anymore. So it's just me alone.
And you do this every day? Is this your routine?
Yes, I go to the beach at some point every day except Saturday because I do a 14-15 hour radio show, start at 2 in the afternoon, and I figure I might get a little tired before the show, and I got to prepare for it. So for this new schedule, I don't go on Saturdays.
Okay.
So 6 days
a week. And your house is what color?
It's like a beigey.
It's Arizona white.
Oh, okay. That's very specific. I love it.
How do you know that, Bob? How do you know what color?
I don't. That's crazy. Made it up. It's kind of just all white.
She's talking about the outside.
I think everybody's going to be rushing to Home Depot to buy that color paint. They may not even have it.
Right. It's a kind of a beige outside, too, right, Carol?
Uh-huh.
It's beige all over the place. White. White beige. More beige.
Okay.
And nice and big, and just incredible to have the breeze flowing through every day. You know,
right.
It sounds
and
lovely.
It is.
The side of the house near the road sort of has the garage area, but the windows upstairs look up at Mount Haleakala, which is due east, actually. And the sun comes up, and it shines in our windows and actually through the kitchen. And then the front, we have no one in front of us because we are on a hill. So we have we live in a community, but...
We're at the tallest house in the compound.
Yeah, so there's nobody behind us because that's a golf course. There's nobody in front of us because we're on a big hill. The people on one side of us are never there, and we use their house for our ghosts. And the people on the other side of us are never, well, they're only there a few months of the year.
Yeah. And so
that's why the ghosts are attracted to your house.
No, they're attracted to hang out with Ion and me, you know. It's fucking nothing to do with the house. They don't even notice it. They are hanging out with our energy. They want to survive when the guff empties, so they're sort of hanging out with us so they don't get lost in the waterfall of destruction when the guff empties. So they figure if we hang out with Bob and Carol, we'll just slide where they go, and then they'll be okay.
So in the morning, you missed it, but when I get up this morning at 4:30 a.m., Bob was still on, and we had a great talk about our history and my history in medicine. And then I went out for my morning walk, so I'll walk the golf courses. I might see one other walker, but I'll see my buddies that work on the golf course, you know, that do all the mowing and the watering. But actually, I was thinking about that. Today's Sunday, so Emilio and Eric and Willie don't work. They're kind of senior guys, so they don't work on the Sunday shift. You know, they either have Sunday, Monday off, or Friday, Saturday. Nobody gets Saturday and Sunday off.
And your point?
So most of my buddies are off on Sunday.
So you didn't see anybody?
No, I just saw Dean. There's a guy, Dean, in the distance.
So your point is what? That it's Sunday?
Well, it's Sunday, but that's Anne's getting a picture of what we do.
Okay. Well,
I do my morning golf course walk, and today I all morning I was thinking it was Monday, even tried to take out the garbage, and I sent the questions that I'd accumulated to Ginny this morning for today's Monday health show.
Yeah, so we're all off schedule because we did the Bob show on Friday. You know, it should be on Saturday.
We started on Friday. So I walked to the bank, which is a side road off the golf course, and dropped off my banking deposit and walked by the lilikoi bushes to see if any lilikoi passion fruit had dropped off. So I could pick fruit on my walk.
Right. So here's the deal. I walk downhill, and sometimes when Carolyn comes, we walk downhill through the golf course. And you have to dodge the golfers and in between them. And if somebody comes up to the top and he's going to look over and he says, oh, there's other golfers down there just finishing on the putting green, so then I can run down while the upper guys are stalled by the lower guys, right? And I can run through them and then run around the corner and get through the long range before the first crew gets down to the next thing to shoot the balls at me. And then we have a whole art of coming home, and we walk through at the golfers and hide behind trees and work our way through, or there's no golfers.
You go through the people playing golf. That's crazy.
Right into the golfers. We've been doing it for 5 years now, literally 5 years. And the golfers, and I'm going along, and I look nice and healthy, and I used to have my boogie board, and I do long-distance swimming now, so don't do the board. But people say, the beach is that way, buddy. You know, I'm walking up the hill with my boogie board, and I say, it's down there. I just turn to them, I say, I've been doing this for 5 years. And they go, man, you look pretty good. No wonder you look good. So I get complimented, but we have to hide behind trees. But listen to this.
You don't get any complaints from the course?
No, you learn how to be polite, you know, you hide, you know, it's an art. You just, you know, when you use the fact that some golfers are ahead of the other golfers and they're watching each other, and while they're trying to protect themselves from each other, you just walk in through the middle and don't get noticed. Or if you do, you don't get hurt. And they see that you are being careful, but the...
Well, a couple of years ago, wasn't there some guy that used to kind of police the area, and
he was an old mean guy, and he told me, you wear a shirt when you walk through the golf course. I didn't have a shirt on.
That's what he complained about?
Yes, he said, he's some old guy from the 19th century, and he said, hey, buddy... And you wear a shirt. Like, I never saw the guy again. I never put a shirt on, but he was weird. But once or twice we got yelled at for having a bike walking through there when we lived in the other place for the first six months.
Yeah.
But the point is, if I come home in the evening and it's dusk, it's not uncommon to see 50 deer in the golf course when I'm walking through, and they start playing games with me. I'll walk towards them, and then the leader will go, woo, and they run ahead a bit. And then they wait for me. Then I walk, and I get closer and closer. Then the leader says, okay, that's it, and they all run forward. So you have this... this massive deer, that's right, massive deer moving ahead of you, okay? So then, in the middle of the night, somebody asked me to write a poem a few years ago, and I said, well, the first line would be, I hear the deer fucking in the course. And what you do, all night long you hear the yelling, the whelps of the deer as they screw each other. All night long.
This sounds familiar. Did you talk about this?
Sounds like Maine, right?
Maine? Is this happening in Maine?
Well, there's a lot of wildlife. I remember, you know, waiting for the bus as a child and seeing bears walk by and things, you know.
Oh, I thought you were talking about you're yelling, the noise.
Well, maybe I didn't know what that was as a child, but now I can appreciate the humor in it.
Right. My poem was I didn't say the right words. I said, I hear, you know, it's like a 19th century poem, but I hear the deer screwing in the woods. That's my opening line. And I must go down to the beach again, you know, the Dover poem. But did I hear Sheila say something? You said something about that.
Yeah, that sounds like a familiar story. Did you say that on the rewrite
I probably said that. I have said that many times on Tailgate. You would have heard
okay.
it. But here's the point, is that you got the deer and you got the golf balls, and it's an art to get through. But we had some friends visit here, and I took them up on the second floor, and we looked through the window to the sloping tiles. And I said, do you see something in there, in the little gunwale, you know, the drainage place up on the roof? And he looks, and he says, no. And I said, look at that little white thing. He says, what's that? I said, it's the golf ball. I said, we do have golf balls come very close to the house, and this one landed in the runway on the drainage, the gutter. So it's sitting there, haven't removed it, but that's another factor. There's always golf balls showing up near our house.
Oh, well, that'll be interesting. Yeah, that's a great little great way to build a scene here, so I like it.
Yes.
Yeah, and actually what I do every morning, I got in this habit of... collecting stray golf balls because they're all over the place. And I started dropping them in my neighbor's planter or whatever. Well, they're away. I thought it would be a good joke that they would come home to about 100 golf balls. So I started collecting them. And as soon as I started doing that, they were everywhere. It's like I would walk along and look over, and I'd sort of kick at one or two balls that maybe the workers had put there. One day I found 12 balls just sitting there.
Right. This is the odd phenomenon. When I walk down through the middle of the golf course, you know, the open middle, there are balls sitting there. Now, this is golfers on meds, whacked out. They can't even find a fucking ball in the middle of the court, right, totally visible, and they're leaving them there. This is the fake life these people have.
They probably thought it went in the woods or somewhere.
They can't even see, but it is awful odd to see golf balls sitting in the middle of the court, you know, course, so visible. What? Who missed it? How did they not find it?
Right.
Well, it wasn't their ball, but they still could have picked up somebody else's ball. They know their ball.
My father's a practical jokester, and he loves golf, so one day he took some golf balls over to the neighbor's house, and he put them where his chickens and ducks were. So when the guy went out there, he thought his... So it was the strangest thing that his hens had laid some golf balls. He didn't realize my father was just playing a joke on him, so he was puzzled for a few hours, and he likes to play jokes on people like that.
What did Dan say, Carolyn? I missed some words. What happened? What did your father do? He left some balls.
Oh, he took some golf balls over to the neighbors, and the neighbor had chickens or ducks or geese or something like that, and he made it look like they had laid golf balls instead of eggs.
Okay, right.
And so it was kind of like the laugh of the neighborhood for a few months.
Yeah, rather dull neighborhood. But the Carolyn gathers up the golf balls and dumps them in the neighbor's pot, and it turns out they want them because they golf.
Oh, of course.
There you go.
Yeah. So Sheila,
they probably are thanking you.
Now, we're not hearing anything about Sheila or of Sheila or from Sheila. You want to say?
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about Sheila's paintings.
What would you like to hear?
Yeah, she doesn't know how to talk about that. Bring up another topic.
Well, I'll ask her questions then. I would love to hear how you became an artist.
Oh, you don't want to hear that.
And what you did before you were an artist?
That's a tearful story. You don't...
I didn't do anything before I became an artist. I was always an artist. I was an artist since I learned there were crayons and paint. So that's all I ever did.
Okay, that's great. So that's been your lifelong career.
And apparently I'm never not painting, according to Ion. I'm constantly painting.
Yes, so whatever. And the major advice that I gave her was to start painting faster and do more in the week. And Sheila will never do that, but that's the advice. That's what she was told to do.
No, I've been doing more. I mean, Ion said, you know, knock on one out a week, but I mean, one out a week is depending on what kind of painting I'm doing.
But you're actually doing it more? You're making that effort?
At the moment, I'm painting on fabric, so I'm doing some different things that I can do. I can do one every 2 days if I want.
Yeah.
It's just a different... It's not to the profoundness or the scale of something like the Ascension painting or the Labyrinth painting. But...
You are doing it faster, though.
I'm doing it faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've actually listened many times since. I don't know why I didn't want to listen to it at the time, but... Remember the session I had where I spoke to Vincent Van Gogh?
Yes.
And I always thought, ugh, I don't know why I did that. But recently I've been listening to it several times, like very many times. And he talks about me blindfolding, putting on a blindfold and painting. So
that's pretty
I will
neat.
Be doing that shortly.
Hmm? Yeah. You know, I had an idea about this. Oh, yeah, Sheila, what TV shows are you watching now?
it's funny, I've actually just started going back to White Collar, seeing the ones I missed. I was watching all the Doctor Who's. gone through that. Game of Thrones, gone through that.
How about
Justified?
Veep? How about Veep?
Veep?
V-E-
no. Yes. That's a comedy, isn't it?
Yes, it's
the
tremendous. It's a docudrama about our life, quadraphenic, in your face. It's Web 2.0. Everybody's interacting with each other's faces, and this is what they show. And she's got a great rubbery face. It's the most accurate expression of our lives ever. It's pretty phenomenal.
Hmm. Oh, I have to see that.
Yeah, you've got to watch
it.
Have you seen it, Ann?
No, I was just saying I'd love to see that.
Yeah, you should be. It's comedy, but there's another level going on. It's totally an expose of the center of the Android meme. Very, very profound what she's presenting.
Oh yeah, definitely will check that out.
I wouldn't have thought.
I rarely watch media actually, but.
Well, what are you listening to, Sheila, and the audio part?
What am I listening to in the audio part?
Just your personal readings over and over again?
I'm listening to that a lot. I actually was listening to the Emerald Tablets.
Oh, what do you think of those? What do you think of them?
It's exciting. I like it. It's like new information in the format of, you know, revelations revealed, and so it's wonderful.
It's never been explained before. Never.
Yeah.
Ever
well,
heard
they always
the
said
tablet?
That the
Emerald... Yeah, go
Sorry?
Ahead, Sheila. Sheila, go ahead.
No, I mean, I always said that, you know, the Emerald Tablets had all the information similar to what the Bible was saying, just in a different way.
It's the original religion. All religions are based on the Emerald Tablets. All the spiritual guidance and master-disciple scenarios. The difference about the Bible is it includes modern media, and... The Emerald Tablets don't include modern media, and none of the other religions do, but the Christian Bible does, because it was going to be part of a culture that creates modern media, and so it would be spread all over the world and lead to the terrible situation we're in now, thanks to the printing press. But the Emerald Tablets are the first psychological, spiritual document.
Hmm. It's interesting how the information was held back.
Yeah. Well, it couldn't be brought out till now. It's all about parallel worlding and a bunch of other dynamics that were part of the mystery landscape that no one was allowed to talk about or was afraid to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So, Anna, we have done 12 editions of the Emerald Tablets out of 16. And,
I'm definitely fascinated about that topic, so maybe you can point me in the right direction where I can look into that and study it a little bit.
You go to Ion and Bob, and you'll see it right there on the front page, but I can send you the link if anybody gives you
That'd be great, because I'm like I love doing research, just like you. I am always digging to learn things. I never like to stop learning, ever, so every day I try to learn something.
Mm. Okay, Sheila, what, do we ask you a question, or do you want to ask us a question? What's next on your mind? What do you like to hear about?
What would I like to hear about?
Yes.
Well, I heard that, how are you feeling, Bob?
Well, Anna, I was feeling great till I talked to Anne, and her life story exhausted me, so I'm lying on a bunch of pillows right now.
He was thinking about all the toddlers climbing
all the children, and the endless rewriting of Matthew's story, and all the 30 books she's written, and exhausting creative
that,
life.
That sounds exhausting, doesn't it?
Did you say dirty books or 30 books?
It's 30. Actually 20, but 20. Yeah, Bob's exaggerating slightly, but that's a lot of books still.
So what are you picking up, Sheila? Why did you're just asking me how am I doing in the fast in general, in the sleep fast?
Yeah, because actually I clicked on the Achieve Radio to hear you live before I came on, and I guess I heard what you said earlier, that you were just lying there, you're lying on bed and you couldn't get up or something like that, and so that was funny.
During the past half hour.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, while you're here. Yes, I did come over here. But I'm in pretty good shape. You know, there's no problem.
So what would invigorate you?
The drops. I just need to go over and get the drops. Is that what you mean, or do you mean as a topic or an idea?
Yeah, as a topic or an idea.
Well, I always like to analyze me and have people be interested in what I do and have them.
Well, that's why I asked about you.
Yeah, but you brought up, you know, how I'm feeling. I don't know. I don't think about those
things.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was very female, yeah.
We did a fantastic, well, a lot of interesting discoveries over the last few weeks, and I really liked the fact that Ion showed up to show those people that JW is in jail. That was a great coup yesterday, you know what I mean, to show that Ion
mm-hmm.
was available, which
mm-hmm.
a lot of people probably didn't believe. So now they're going to have to figure out how did that happen? So that's fun. And
the master was saying he's not doing any sessions anymore. Is that true?
He hasn't done any sessions in almost 2 years, but it doesn't mean he won't.
Until yesterday.
Yes, he did many sessions yesterday. People asked questions about themselves, and he answered them. So there were many sessions done yesterday. But
yeah, because Bob, you know, Ion has said that when they do come back, they might not answer any questions. So that was actually surprising to us. People didn't realize how special that was on that level.
Yeah, I implied that they're not going to, not everybody gets a session. Ion's going to only serve the 1%. He did 2 years of, lazy interviews. Wasn't that impressed with it, and he's not going to do that again. And so there's a selective process. Maybe somehow I'll determine it, who gets to have a private session.
Well, it's interesting because when I heard them, and I'm like, well, you know, what is there to ask? And I remember Jeannie and I had a conversation, I don't know, a while ago, like, if you came back, what would you ask? Because now it's like, well, that's a good question. And probably was the only thing I would ask, maybe about a painting that I want to do. But otherwise, I could just hear everything say, well, you already know, or please yourself, or, you know, there's just so much that I know now. And a lot of things that I would ask would sound kind of ridiculous. Kind of just get on with it.
I would ask how he chooses the people that he does the sessions with.
That'll be up to, he'll rely on Carolyn's perception and probably not on mine. And it'll be a collaboration between JW and Carolyn, or JW or Ion.
I remember when I was interviewing Matthew for his book, he said Ion had chosen him out of, you know, several people, which you just explained to me earlier, how
he was the first guy to show up. He was the first guy to show up from the radio show. That's why he got picked. He was the first, and Ion was ready to get something going right away. So Matthew walked in the door and got the gig.
Nice. I said, well, if he sees everybody that's coming, I wonder if he sees me that's telling his story and what he would think of, you know, my descriptions of him and whatnot.
Well, back in 2009 or 2010, and Ion was always telling us, you ain't seen nothing yet. We had no clue what was coming. We had no clue we'd be doing the RNA drops. All that came later. But in one night, I don't know where it was, I haven't come across it yet, and I'm reviewing all the sessions, 6,000 hours. And he named a whole bunch of names. He said, so-and-so will do this, and so they named all the names. So I'm waiting till I get to that session, and I want to see if they're accurate, if it turned out that way. But
I'd go there. I would go there right away.
Yeah, you would you would go where,
get to
Sheila?
The meat. She would get to the meat instead of going to the appetizer.
Was that early on?
No, Sheila, you said you would go there. You would go where?
I would go to that session right away. That would be fascinating.
Well, I can't find it. I mean, there's 6,000 hours, so I'm working my way chronologically through. And I remember key points, and eventually there's a session with that, you know. But I have not heard come across a session where he names the people. I can't find it. Where do I look? I have to just methodically go one after another.
Mm-hmm.
And I find out all kinds of amazing things. It's very interesting to me how much I, sort of in a way, don't remember, and I hear these sessions again, and they're all new. And it just reminds me of how busy we were for 2 years, you know, endless private sessions and just roaring along for 2 years, never had a time for a second look.
Well, I can't imagine, because even I had 14 private sessions, and
right.
I'm still, when I listen to one that I've listened to 10 times, I'm like, what?
That's
I never
right.
heard that before. I mean, just so, what is that? That's incredible.
I know. Now, are you aware of Ion and Bob, the new information
yeah.
farm? Yeah, and mm-hmm. so you click on archives, they're in they're in dated order, but it's all lined up for you, all the ones, and you can click on any one to see the imagery, and maybe there's comments there too, so if you're, that's where the comments world is.
Yeah, that's a great job that Ed did.
It's very excellent work, excellent design, and you know, we're so lucky to have that sponsoring our anarchism.
Now, I have a question for Bob.
Yeah.
I would like to know at what point in your life you first realized the world was different than what you might have thought as a child.
I know exactly when it happened. May 1971, we have stayed at the East Village Other office in New York City. We hitchhiked from Nova Scotia down to New York City, spent a few weeks in New York City living with the Walter Bowert's newspaper, though he wasn't there anymore, and we would listen, we'd sleep in a dirty building, and the hippie journalists, they were putting out the East Village Other, and once a week they would put together the paper, so they'd take acid. So I'd be listening to them, you know, up all night, listening to them screaming and yelling, and I always remember they got into hysterics about the lady who was on acid, took the fucking baby, she was a babysitter, put the baby in the oven and roasted the baby. And they were laughing their heads off, so that was the kind of manic environment I remember there. So then we visited some friends down in Texas, and then we went to Mexico, and while we were in Texas, I came across a book that listed the psychics of the day. There was a book on about six psychics by Brad Steiger. He used to write books on that kind of stuff. And one of them was Bertie Ketchings in Austin, Texas. And we had a friend in Austin, Texas. We visited him. And then I went over and had a private session with Bertie Ketchings. And she told me that I was a spiritual gift to the masses.
Wow.
And then she said, you will be with Frank and Gail, and there will be an earthquake. Now, that's Frank and Gail Zappa, who we were on our way to see. And she picked up on that, so I knew she was accurate. So she makes this ridiculous statement, that will be a spiritual gift to the masses. I didn't know what to make of that. Forget that. When I got back to Canada, I told my friend, he said, Bob, throw that away. Fucking don't think like that. That's ridiculous. So, yes, I didn't think about it. But as time unfolded and I ended up being in the best places, the best people and the best scenes and best knowledge, after a while, by 1987, I knew I am a spiritual gift to the masses. So I went on the radio and never looked back. And then turned out Ion was my baby. And here we are. You're interviewing me. And I'm the greatest person that ever happened in history. So Bertie was right.
And so modest.
Yes. But I'm telling you, that's the day my life changed, when that woman told me that.
That's awesome. And how did you happen to meet this woman? She just was a random person.
No, the book. She was one. It was a book of modern psychics. And I was in Austin, Texas, and I was reading the book, and I said, Bertie Ketchings lives in Austin. So I called her up and went over and had a reading, and Carolyn wrote it down. Carolyn did so fucking whacked out. She didn't even have a reading herself. I'm the one who had the session. And she wrote it out, and we had this little piece of paper with her small handwriting for years. It was all crammed on this little piece of paper. And there it was, and she said some other interesting things. And Garrett Dean back in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, turned me on to other psychics. So I started having readings every couple of years. They're all pretty interesting. But Bertie stood out. And so in 1988, when I know I'm going back to Texas, I ask the Evergreens, is Birdie Catching still alive? And they said, yes. I said, where is she? And I said, she was in Austin. She said, no, she lives in Dallas now. So when I got to Dallas, I looked her up, and she was in Dallas. I went over and had a follow-up session. And I don't think I told her what she told me before, and I don't remember anything dramatic happening in that second session. But the Evergreen said she was a very good, real psychic, and she kind of proved it with that prediction. Imagine that, 40 years later, 2011, it's obvious we are bringing something unique to the world, the RNA drops. It's a new kind of spirituality. It's a we're atheistic, anarchistic spiritualists. You know, we're nothing common. And ion is an incredible phenomenon. We got the drops. And I've always, what I declared for myself in 1985 to a comedian, a lesbian comedian, Sheila Gostick. She would visit my house, never had met her before. James Kinney brought her over. And as she was leaving, I said to her, and I don't know why I said, I intend to become the funniest person who ever lived. So that was preposterously said in 1985. With ION, that is entirely possible. Even Sheila could testify that she's had the funniest fucking experiences with ION, and I'd be proud of them. Wouldn't you say?
I would, absolutely.
Yeah, he tickles your funny bone in a way that nothing else does.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, that's why Sheila's with the man she is now. She's, you know, she can't, you know, live with J.W. She's attempted to seduce J.W., and the mother-in-law caught Sheila walking around with no fucking clothes on, and that's a whole story. But so she found the next best thing, her present boyfriend, who she says is the funniest person she's ever met. So the guy has to be funny, because...
And he's from Georgia.
Yeah, he's from Georgia. So she got a pale imitation of ION, but that's the best that she could get, because ION is the funniest thing that's happened ever. So with the help of ION.
Wow, okay.
What can I say? I always go where it's the best place to go.
Yes, that's right. You're in the
capital. I go right to the center of the heart. Whatever's going on, I'm there.
That's right. Yeah, who would believe the San Diego Cresto bounce through the center of the world? And you might have been a little off there, Sheila, but it prepared you for ION, I guess. The San Cresto, what are the name of the mountains?
Oh, those mountains, the one in Colorado. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, something
that. That was, you thought it was the center of everything, but it might have been a little off, right?
Yeah, it was off.
See, Ann, I even know where her own ideology was violated, you know, back in 2008.
There's nothing like violated ideology, though.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, that's awesome. And so I can definitely, now that I know so much about you now, you know, maybe I can devote a few chapters to these characters now.
Yes, what would you ask Carolyn a question? See if she has anything to say.
And, well, same thing with her. I would love to know, like, when she, were you kind of along for the ride, or was she the spearhead of the thought process?
No,
were you together on it?
I was the leader. And Carolyn always worried about the food, and she had enough money to buy the fucking food, so she'd always get a job to fucking buy the food. And I didn't care. I didn't need to eat, and so I didn't have regular employment because I didn't require food. So we are two parallel worlds that never touch, never meet, never connect, but occasionally
we do. But she took care of you. Come on, Bob. She took care of you.
No, you can't take care of me.
Give me a break.
I do not need taking care of. I'm naturally happy, slackful, and healthy. Like, what the hell? She needs taking care of. She's the one who's always getting sick, and I have to fucking fill in the dishes or something.
Listen, when she went away on her whatever her conference is, she'd have to load up the fridge for you to make sure that you ate.
That's her problem. She thinks I need to eat. She can't believe. She comes home, nothing's been eaten.
Yeah, you know what happened the last time, Sheila, when I went to Florida in October? It might have been on the phone a few days before I got home, and Bob says, hey, you didn't leave me any food this time. And I said, Bob, walk into the garage to the second refrigerator freezer and open the freezer. There are 9 quarts of stew and soup in there. And he said, oh.
And I didn't even bother eating them, and I didn't miss them, and I didn't even know they were there.
Oh, yeah, but you were inquired. You missed
what?
Them when they weren't there. You inquired about them, and you missed them when they weren't there.
Well, it's just, I was just making conversation, you know, just not much to say.
Yeah.
So, you
so it sounds like she takes care of you in a lot of ways.
She does
take
not
care of
take
other.
Care of me.
We'll talk, yes. Ann. We'll talk.
That's the fucking line. I
gotcha.
Take care of her.
Wink,
I,
wink.
Wink, wink.
Carol, you will see in Veep. You will see in Veep, you know, the aides are always telling her what to say as she meets people. They lean over and whisper everything. That's with me. I've had to whisper, Carolyn. I've had to be here when the fire would have broken out, but I caught it. She's too busy answering emails and abstractly trying to heal the world. I'm the one who notices what's going on. And so I would take us to vacations in McLuhan and Zappa and all those places, and she wouldn't even know who they were. And she got to be...
So you were the entertainment factor, but she was the one that was taking care of everything.
I was the entertainment director, but it's the Leisure Society, so that's a more important role than the doctor.
One time when I went away, Bob used up a whole session with Ion trying to get them to tell him do something with the fuse box or turn something on or off or figure out how to make the refrigerator work. I mean, it was pathetic. It was so funny.
I was trying to be the funniest person in the world, and I was trying to bug Ion, and he did get
all
pissed
right.
off.
I got Ion
screaming. I made Ion have emotion.
One time in the beginning, Anne, I broke into a heated argument between Ion and Bob and told Bob to leave Ion alone. Stop hurting God.
Yeah, and then she realized that Ion was God or something that can't be hurt, and she said, what weird is that, that she thought Bob was hurting him. But I got a story.
And that's
for you.
How bad Bob is.
Yeah, I got a story for you. I brought
great.
Over my 2,000 books. I used to have 5,000 books, and I guess only 2,000 now, from New York City. Cost me $12,000 a year ago. So I have my library in the garage. So one day when I'm organizing it a year ago, a guy walks by and he stops and he says, a library? I've never seen a library on Maui. People do not read over here. And he came in, he was looking at the books, and he was amazed that there was an actual library here, you know, on bookshelves. And so we struck up an interesting conversation. He turned out to be a juvenile delinquent who ended up being a trillionaire on the, no, let's say, 10-100 millionaire on Wall Street, but he's a juvenile delinquent kind of guy. But but he told me that nobody has any books, nobody reads over here, and he was flabbergasted that I have a library. So I do not allow neighbors to see that I have a library. They might come and steal the books. So
when I was a child, I had a library, and I just used to charge the neighbors for the books, so just make them pay to read the books.
No, then you have to talk to them. I don't like talking to the neighbors. We don't have any neighbors. I'm not going to talk to them. I'm too busy setting up private sessions for people like Sheila, you know, doing important work. I'm not going to talk to the neighbors about renting my books.
One time late at night, Bob forgot to close the lanai sliding glass doors, and he was screaming out into the neighborhood. And, you know, we're pretty isolated, so the only people that heard were the people right next door to us, right beside
us. So I was swearing and yelling for about 3 hours into about 3 a.m, and I forgot that the window was open. So what happened, Carolyn?
So the next day when I was in the pool, the man part of the couple said, you know, what was going on? Or, what, you know, he sort of gently alluded to it, and I said,
well, say what it is. What was your husband screaming about?
Screaming about last night, and I said, he was rehearsing for a radio play, so... Yeah, he forgot to shut the windows. So Bob marveled at my quick,
That was good.
Alibi, yeah.
I was very impressed with that. She came
that was
up with
really,
a quick,
that's smooth.
Yeah, excellent alibi. Bob was rehearsing a play, and I was impressed with that point.
Anybody who's ever been in a relationship for a long time gets good at covering for the embarrassment of our spouse, I guess, at times.
Yeah, very good at lying, covering up. Right.
And that's mostly why we avoid people. I won't let Bob meet any of, you know, many of my friends.
Yeah, it's too confusing. They get too confused. It's not that I'm popular. I just confuse them. You know, there's too much goes on. They're not used to meeting a spiritual gift to the masses.
Right?
They mostly can't figure out why on earth someone like me is with someone like Bob.
Yes.
That's too much to explain.
Yeah, too much.
Right.
Too much like opposites. But, you know, I was just thinking that I could explain, I could do a whole thesis on what it means to be a spiritual gift to the masses in a whole new way. Right now, a modern form of spiritual gift to the masses, there's five TV shows that are about me, Carolyn, and Ion, Anna. Literally, they are about us. And that's Android
Media. What five are they?
Fringe, Lost, that was earlier, Lost, Fringe, what is that? The Good Wife, Person of Interest.
You going to put Veep in there?
Veep, definitely Veep. What else? Flash Forward was about us, and
That's six.
Yeah, Peaky Blinders, Empire Boardwalk. Have you ever seen the beginning of Empire Boardwalk?
No.
Well,
yeah, all the bottles.
Isn't it Boardwalk Empire?
All the bottles, Sheila. That's right.
All the
Those
bottles.
Are RNA bottles washing up on the Maui beach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he walked away.
Oh, interesting.
But right when we were bottling Nirvana, they put out a TV show. It's never been shown before, where all these bottles are washing up on the Atlantic, New Jersey beach, and he's the mafia controller of Atlantic City. And it's all bottles. And it happened right when that show started, right when the Iron Eye drops started being distributed. See? That is, and I think we talked about that, right, Sheila? That we knew that.
Yeah.
But that was.
It came in on the wave.
Yeah.
All the bottles came in on the wave, yeah.
It's so ironic.
And Sheila, how long have you been taking the drops?
Pretty much when they came out.
Oh, and what kind of interesting experiences have you had from it?
Well, initially when I started taking them, I got a strong sense of confidence. I felt like my confidence really increased, mm-hmm. and but I mean I can't tell anymore. I can't attribute really. I'm sure there's lots of things, but I just can't contribute what's going on because it's been so long and ongoing and. And I haven't measured anything, you know, I'm not, it's just everything feels like it's just ticking over. Does that make sense?
Do you have a routine? Do you take them in the morning or do you find them better in the evening? Do you have like a specific way?
No, when I think about it, usually a little in the morning, a little at night, and then I give Charlie some as well, so.
And do you take it before or after eating or, you know, is there specific way
usually
that
before yeah. But I'm not really conscious of it anymore. In the beginning I was, but now it's like mm-hmm. yeah, they're there and just I take them when I think about it, when I open the fridge.
And what about you, Carolyn, when do you take them?
First thing I get up, I'll drink a couple cups of water with my Remag and Relight dose, and then when I swallow that down, I'll go to the fridge and take a dropper and a half full. I don't count up the drops anymore, so I do that first thing in the morning. And then either sometime in the afternoon if I've forgotten, I'll take them before bed. And some people pretend like it disturbs their sleep, but I've never found that to be a problem.
Right.
I've never found that either.
There's certainly not a problem like like three toddlers. But I also wanted to find out if you use the cards a lot. What do you think about the cards?
Ann, can you, Ann, this is Bob's executive producer, Ginny. Just one moment.
Bob, hey, Ginny.
Hi. Hey, everybody. I'm just keeping track of the time, and I know Allison's been on the phone desperately waving her hand for a little bit. Can we bring her into the conversation, Bob? Are